down to brass tacks.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yes.
I heard a little recording back, like someone else on the air.
You think you're getting tapped?
Yeah, tap me in the big thing. All they could tap me is to tell me how they can give me some money or something in the big thing. Okay. I got wanted to worry about that. Now, Mr. Ellis, this morning on your radio station, as usual, I heard in the news, Dr. Clay Maskell, in the brief part of the news, said that driver's license fees will be abandoned. And I said, what? That's a big move.
You said road tax, man.
Road tax. So I listened now and I said, how's it going to go about that? And then I get the understanding that you'll be paying it now whenever you use the pump. Am I right?
Yes, the road tax would be replaced by a tax on gas.
Okay. Would you call that a banding or a shift? Do you call that tax will be abandoned or it is moving?
The road tax, as we know it, would have been abandoned. The tax on gas would be increased. But the road tax, and it's explained this way, if you look at what was printed today, it says that we currently have something called a road tax. Do you know that road tax for a commercial vehicle is only $400, while those of you that have bigger vehicles have to pay $900 and all sorts of things? That has to change because the tax doesn't make sense. He's saying the people who use the road more should be the ones who should be paying more for the tax. Now,
okay, that is the main thing that I want to get at here now.
Right.
And what I'm saying is this. These new type of politicians that I believe can run a wand or run shop. That's my belief. They're in school long. Now, if you move that tax from empty that we are collecting it, and you decide to collect it at the pump, the person, for instance, like you, who would drive your vehicle in Riverboard and leave and go back home, I believe you might save on it. How would the fellow who lives in the Riverside bus stand and go to Silver Sand with a minibus, how you would work him?
But the point here, which he
has
made,
how it will work out.
His projection is the person who uses the road more pays more.
Yeah, but what I'm asking is this.
So it means that if you are using the road more and you have to put more gas in your car, then you will pay more for the use of the road.
Do you believe that that is fair?
The question is, do you believe that the existing situation is fair?
But no, he subverted the idea, not me.
No. I am asking about the existing situation.
I am saying this here. Right. And don't get me wrong. Don't let us... Because, Miss Ellis, knowing you for all these years, when I listen to this, I hear two different David Ellis's. And
this question about who you're hearing isn't relevant to the discussion. Let's move on.
This is what I'm trying to get at.
Yes.
No, I'm not saying that the way it's done now is the right way. I'm not saying there can be a better way. I'm saying that this one that you hear is foolishness. Because anybody in Barbados that have a minibus who delivers from, let's say, shops, salesmen, and et cetera, that use more gas and diesel, I want to know if you can put something in place to help them. You can't just come and say, I'm going to abandon this. And this is the new one, and I don't understand where it's going because where I'm concerned, I don't advise it. It didn't affect me, but I don't understand it. That is one. Let me move to the next one because I want to be quick that it'll be getting. Now, you don't like going back, especially going back in the days that taxpayers' money was this.
Anyhow, you proceed. Finish.
I heard the leader of the opposition say from June the 1st, non-contributory pensioners will go up. She went on to say, what can you do with $75? And she went on and went on. Now, I believe that anyone working in Barbados and won't qualify for national insurance unless they are unfair, like how I went through some problems, then I was trying to qualify. Working for businesses, companies that take out it and refuse to pay anything. I'm talking about those fellows that are unlucky. I'm talking about people that refuse to pay 52 contributions to the national insurance. I believe if you refuse to pay at least 500 contributions, which will qualify you to national insurance, I don't believe it should call. I believe if you get anything, even $75 a week, you should be comfortable and say, Lord, thank you. Because you refuse. Some of them, for instance, 30 years, I will not pay at least 10 years towards the pension. You don't get anything, go home and relax. And if they give you $75, say, Lord, I thank you.
Look, that's one way of...
To come and tell me that you're going to raise the non-contributory pension and nothing at all but those who contribute?
I don't understand. That's not correct, you know.
Because there was
discussion also on what would happen with the people who contributed. Because there's a differential.
Who did that?
I heard it last night from Mr. Dr. Maskell. He spoke about that last night.
Okay, well, I didn't hear it yet. But let me go on because I don't want to take up. Now, at that same commission that was set up by the Barbados Labour Party in 2004 and was put into law in 2006, it didn't only say that if you appear, you wouldn't get nothing. And she's complaining about 75, that is something.
The issue here has to do with trying to bridge the gap between how inflation has increased and what has happened to the pensions over time. There's been a marked difference between the two. So that was used as the justification for trying to increase the non-contributory pensions.
You don't believe
that they deserve a cent?
Non-contributory pension?
Yeah.
I would like everybody to get money if you deserve it.
Right.
That is what I'm getting at, Miss Ellis.
What about if the country can afford it? Because ultimately, that is the issue.
This is what I'm getting at, Miss Ellis. And don't get me away from my point. Because these days, you just get in a lot and shift people about, you know. But let me get to my point, Miss Ellis.
What's your point? You took a long time to get there.
Hear that now? At that same commission was set up, the pension age, which was 65 at that time, was moved, in other words, every 4 years, it moved by 6 months, which at the moment now is at 67. Imagine someone 50 years old paying international insurance, they're begging, they're paying for their benefits coming. Nobody might get pension at 69, 70. Now, I feel that she was thinking about the poor people, as she's giving me the impression that is not what looking into. I don't believe that nobody should be paying national insurance and have to wait till the 69, 70 to get pension. Wait till 67 going 67, 67, I mean 67 and a half, 68 and going on like that. If the leader of your opposition wants to look into what she would say, the unfair treatment to these old people. Because I ain't old, I'm over 70, but I ain't old, so you know she ain't me. You understand me? I believe that is a rare area that she should look.
All right,
And let's see what we could do. But stop trying. Now, this morning, let me finish the last one.
No, you've had a fair run already, so let somebody else get in, because we're finishing at 1:30. Hello, Dr. Brastatz?
Yes, morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you doing, sir?
I'm well, and you?
Well, I'm remarkable, you know. With some
relentlessly so, I'm sure.
Relentlessly so. I've just eaten two Pavi mangoes. You know what we call Pavi mangoes?
Mm-hmm.
Those nice tasting ones. And that is, I've ingested that, and that is good enough to let you get some lunch. Now, Mr. Ellis, on his analysis, you say he's like seeing the crust of what can be a political earthquake. Well, Mr. Ellis is given to questioning persons. I guess I can ask permission to question him. Political earthquake in whose favor?
I'm not going there.
Okay, all right. All right, don't worry. All right.
I'm not going there. I think I understand what my role is here. And if I have a certain observation, but I'm not going to go into detail on that.
Pretty enough.
Not on the air.
Man, you still on the road this evening.
And trust me, I tell you all ever since. At a personal level, my mind is made up already. Nobody ain't coming and telling me anything at this stage that will sway me one way or the other.
But on the air,
I need to be open to all opinions.
That's one thing. Yeah, you say that all the time. Yeah, but you know, your mind could be made up and you could be misinformed too. Anyhow,
well, I take that risk.
All right, fair enough. But now, all on Sandra, I want it to be clearly understood that Mr. David Ellis, in his opening remarks, said that he didn't know so much was done when he heard the Prime Minister explain the amount of things that were done in the Esplanade the other night. This is Mr. Ellis's observation, and I thank him heartily for having highlighted that and putting it out there that so much has been done. Now,
they
got hot on heels of that.
You know that.
The PR, along, the DLP.
Along with that, though, there are a lot of things that occurred that weren't mentioned. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And they weren't all good things. So I have to weigh the good and the bad.
But fair enough. But I thank you for having put that out there as regarding the things achieved, etc. Now, I'll also be fair to you when you ask for persons to read or get as much information on both of the parties out there. And I agree with that, too.
And what we have is a one-sided discussion about proposals. So you take a political gamble in this country if you put your manifesto out early. Because that you put yourself in a position where your proposals can be scrutinized and criticized. But if you come late, you are likely to find less time for the criticism, and you know you may be able to move through that way. But many people have over the years felt a little uncomfortable with manifestos being produced really late. So, how do you see it?
I see it. I'm glad you've asked me that question, because my take is this: that if I put something in my manifesto and somebody comes after me and duplicate it, obviously, it is my proposal early o'clock, so I don't have to worry whoever come and duplicate it. I put my manifesto there and done with that. You would know, obviously, mine was out. And if you know, this has been duplicated. They've already got that in their manifesto. But I am not going to worry too much about the manifesto right now.
To what extent do you believe that manifestos influence people?
Manifestos would be a lot of projecture and what persons or parties would want to see or would gravitate toward.
But on the ground, do you really believe that they are as effective as some people suggest in trying to sway people to vote for one or the other?
Yeah, some things in a manifesto can really
some
catch
things.
You.
So you got to have catch you. So you have to have a couple of things that are big ticket items. Once you get those big ticket items, then, for instance, you get the impression that the big ticket items in this manifesto relate to the pension issue, the university education, and certainly
the NSRL scrap.
The NSRL, right. These are big ticket items.
Right.
Are trying to deal with the economy, rescheduling the debt and stuff like that.
So
we now have to wait and see what are the big ticket items coming from the Democratic Labour Party.
Fair enough.
All right. How sustainable are those ideas?
But I'll give you one, because as I speak to you here in my hand, I think I highlighted this already.
You got the manifesto already?
No. You just hang in there a bit, sir. I've got in my hand the Barbados Sustainable Recovery Plan 2081. I highlighted that already. And I've got also...
You sure that in the manifesto?
Get these, sorry?
You sure that would be part of the plan after the elections? I mean, DLP plan?
Very much, very, very, very sure it would be. It's a projection. And
what makes you sure about that?
Because it's there, we can come and make sport that people are a little stupid in the interim.
So you can't do that? So hold on a minute. Isn't there a possibility that the party can come to you with a plan that says, look, we have followed this particular policy for the last 10 years, and in our judgment, there's a need for change. This change will be completely different. This is not going to be the same thing that we did before, including dismissing that particular plan that the government has written.
Okay, I'm not going to say to doing that.
Isn't it possible?
All things are possible, but I'm saying in this case, the government won't come to all the extent. Look, the consultation, social partners, all these persons, et cetera, to all of this, then to come and discard it in the next breath, that would be foolhardy to do that. But carrying on with documents, persons get the Barbados Labour Party manifesto, get the DLP manifesto. Also, the government has got a progress fax. Get that. Get the sustainable recovery plan. Get all of them and read them. So when you call for one, I agree with you. You have the other. So that way, it isn't going to be heavy on one side.
So if I told you that there are a lot of people like me who would have made up their minds already, even before manifestos came out, what would influence people to do that?
Well, let me give you this one, though. You got a political, some political Santa Clauses going around. The first time in the history of I've been around long, and I've seen all kind of elections. This political Santa Claus behavior, but when you give it so much, ultimately,
you see,
what is it going to be to what is there to be happy?
But I told that's why
after?
That is why I just told you
all this, eh?
That's why I just told you that. There may, I don't know how sizable a chunk of the electorate it is, but there are people whose minds are made up on issues other than what you see coming in the manifesto, any promises made in the manifesto. And that's an interesting part of the psychology associated with elections. It is true that you may get one or two things that could cause people to jump and or to decide that they're going to step back because they can see a proposal that may hurt them. But in general terms, I suggest to you, there are a lot of people who have already said, this is what I'm going to do, manifesto or no manifesto. If they produce no manifesto, it's still going to do what I got to do. All right? That's how it is. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good morning, sir. How are you?
I am fair, and you, Mr. Ellis?
I am well.
No, Mr. Ellis, I've said to you before that Democratic Labour Party callers, in my opinion, when I judge the program, respond to things said by the Barbados Labour Party, but they generally don't come with ideas to start anything. And today, I want to respond to a couple of things that I heard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you asked the question just now, what would cause people to be like you, Mr. Ellis, who have made up your mind for the BLP, right? That's what you are saying?
I didn't say that.
But you said, I had your mind made up.
I didn't say that. I certainly would not be using this forum in that kind of way to say how I've made up my mind and to encourage people to do likewise.
Okay,
I'm not going to do that.
Good. Well,
I'm here to give you the opportunity to talk about how you see situations, to give everybody an opportunity to be part of it, not to promote political parties and candidates, but at the same time, we have business to transact. We got things to do in the country, so let's talk about the things that we have to do. If there are ideas that have been advanced by parties for trying to deal with the problems, what are your thoughts, one way or the other, about the solutions?
Well, I would do that, Mr. Ellis, because I really have some good ideas, but I still need to get through some of these myths that went through the program this morning, though. First, the manifesto you spoke about, because you said it would be a bad thing to bring a manifesto late. Just remember that.
I did not say that it would be a bad thing. And let me be clear.
Okay.
I gave you two scenarios.
Right.
I gave you the scenario of people who would say that if you bring a manifesto early, it is open to scrutiny and attack.
Right.
And if you bring it late, there is another body of opinion on that.
That's some a fair people, point, Mr. Ellis.
That's all I'm point. I'm giving you both sides of the equation.
That's a fair point, but I needed to add that the manifesto issued last night by the Barbados Labour Party is incomplete. They said, because remember, the meeting was just by me, I could even sleep. And they said that the manifesto is a mini manifesto, a partial one. So the real manifesto is to come.
It is coming in different phases.
Right. So you don't have the full manifestos yet. That's the one. The next thing is about this gas. You also said that the tax is not a. You said no. They say the tax is abandoned, and you may agree with it. I don't think the tax is abandoned because you still have to pay the tax. I think the location, no, the process is abandoned, and that is that rather than collect it at the end, you collect it up front.
You're still being taxed.
Right.
But you're taxed differently. You're using a different method to get the tax. The notion of a tax is not abolished. It is that particular tax that is abolished.
Very important to mention it because Mr. Ellis ain't too long come back from taking my father to the supermarket there at Chanel's, and he's 95 years old, and he was saying to me, these things sound like bare gimmick. Oh, you can abandon the road. Oh, you can pay the tax. So I am glad now to tell him that the tax is not abandoned. It just changes methodology, as you say, right? No, I want to know.
But there's still. But before you go on, though.
Yes.
It is still important to me to look at the pros and cons of the two methods. The existing method that many people cry out against, where they believe that, you know, you really pay too much money in road tax.
Right.
And the notion that you are better served by a system where the more you travel, the more you pay.
It seems to me, Mr. Ellis, I don't think I have a real particular problem with it, though, to be honest with you. Because it could have some validity in that if you don't drive the car, you don't pay in the road. That's you're damaging the road. So I think it has some validity in it. That's the honest truth. But sometimes you don't always see things to get into gear.
Of course.
And then you might see the other things. Now, I want to know, what about those people who have these lawn maintenance businesses and so, we'll call them cut grass and so. They go to the gas station and purchase gas and diesel to run the lawnmowers and the rackers, and so they're going to end up getting taxed even though they've got a vehicle by the road.
Yes, but remember this, though. You have to look at this in the context of how you also deal with fuel prices generally. You know that there has long been a lot of discussion about the fact that people felt that more of the savings when the price of oil is down could and should have been passed on to the consumer.
Right.
So you need to look at that and other policies and the degree to which together those policies can reduce certain costs that will ultimately not make it seem as though a much bigger burden is being placed on your shoulders. The whole question of economic growth and stimulating economic growth and development must also be tied into that. So what I'm hearing here is a notion, is an idea that says all other factors will remain constant, and then you will have to pay more for gas.
Well, I know that aspect is really good.
That's what I'm hearing. And you know, you got to look at it, you know, in the context of all the proposals and stuff that have been advanced for trying to deal with the country's economic woes.
No, earlier in the week, Mr. Ellis, and up to this morning, there's been a lot of criticism still on the Democratic Labour Party's performance on the first night, which is the Sunday night. But during your clip just now, a little while ago, you had a clip there by Lemmy Craig, who was talking about Smith on a platform, and people saying they want Garner.
The Garner.
Then Garner came on stage and said, well, the man is as ugly as a red crocus bag.
That's one person saying
this,
that.
This is happening down in the 60s. Let's show you what was involved in politics. And I think these things are taken lightheartedly. I didn't really think that people take them to this extent. And these were happening all the way back down years. So to see so much emphasis being placed on what was said here.
Come on, man. Behave.
Behave. Let me add some
First of all, what he referred to was somebody in the crowd saying that. That's completely different from from speaker after speaker going after an individual.
Mr. Ellis,
in the way that people did it.
No, Mr. Ellis, you recognize it. Speaker after speaker going after the individual was the intent. That was the plan. Because
yes, and therefore,
the leadership.
So that's true. But having done that,
yes,
you have to suffer the consequences of the perception that it was overkill.
But
it is not. It is not that you should not go after a leader and ask that person to account for their period in government. There's nothing wrong with that. But it is the degree to which you go. And that's what went wrong with that.
Well, when you say, I don't understand, you, when you say degree, you mean the statements made by Mr. Eswick and about, I think that's the
No.
You mean too many of them spoke?
You know, if you get bitten by one dog, that's one thing. But if a whole set of dogs come after you and pull you apart, what then happens is the imagery of that is that if you're a bystander and you're looking at it, you're horrified. And right. The same thing applies to how we attack one another. I mean, and as I said earlier, you also have to watch how this society deals with attacks on men versus right. attacks on women.
You need to look at the society, Mr. Ellis. I can show you why. We had a minister, I don't even know if you can remember if he was a minister, but we had a man who was a senator, could not get a seat at all, no matter how he tried. And I know he wanted to be prime minister. I used to tell my Democrat, my Barbarian Liberty friend, this man could be the next prime minister. He said, listen, the first thing...
Stop being wicked, man. Come on. You know, that's why in this period... We have to be so vigilant. And I am asking you guys to remember that Dennis and I have been in this business for a long time, you know. So when you come with these kinds of approaches that we have to dump, we're not like, these things can't pass us, you know. Don't try it. Down to brass tacks. Going on to 1:30 today. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. Yes, I'm just calling because I'm a little concerned, well, a lot concerned, actually, because I also am a disability person, and I receive funds from the NIS, and they are so low. And I am concerned, not because I don't believe that the elderly don't deserve money, because in this, the way that we are struggling, buying food or paying bills, the bills get lapped over, they turn them off, you got to do one or the other. My money is nowhere near $900. And I ain't got a problem because if the minister believed that that is what the minimum people can live by, well, I have no problem with them getting. I am just wondering if she will consider to look at those who are getting way less than that. And try to do something for us because...
What are those people getting right now?
Well, mine is 7. And I can't live on it.
Well, tell
that
me.
That is the truth.
Share with us, you know, how life is like having to live on that $700. You live alone?
No, I live with my husband, but he's not working. And he's not a person at work all the time. He's like, you know, anything he gets to do,
mm-hmm.
he go and do. So it's mostly me that has to actually pay the bills.
So how do bills work? You have to postpone paying one bill this
week? Oh, yes. I call the Light and Power for about nearly 3-4 weeks and get them, begging them all the time to please push back that bill for me. And they were kind enough to do it, and I thank God for that.
Right.
And when you go buy food, listen, I write a list every week. I write a list. When I have the money, I write this list.
Yes.
And Mr. Ellis, I have to rewrite the list 3 times because when I count up what I need from what I have money for, I have to change that
list. What have you had to sacrifice?
Mr. Ellis, so many, because I have to buy my medication. I have fibromyalgia, which is paying to all
so
my
joints.
So
you don't get any medication through the formulary?
Yes, I can get them, but they don't work like how Lyrica.
Okay.
Because when I take them, they make me fall down. When I take the normal medicine from the hospital or the clinic, yes. I am not able to hold myself if I'm going to fall.
So your bill, therefore, for medication every month will be like what?
Well, that there is 30 tablets well, for the month is like $50-something for those.
Yes.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to buy those. But then you got to pay the bills and buy your food. And it is really, really hard because all I'm asking is if the NIS, God, you know, every month that bill, that check come, I pray to God I see something more on it. Believe me, I pray. I know people are talking and people might be saying, why? I could only tell you from my standpoint and from my daughter's standpoint, who called yesterday with the two children, father is dead. We don't live together, but I know her money and no more than mine, and she can't really survive. And you can understand, she suffered with, what do you call it now, sickle cell. I got fibromyalgia. It is hard to live on that money, and that little money the little girl getting can't really do nothing.
But look, I want her. You all to tie all of this back to the country as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Barbados' economy has not been growing in such a way that it can support this.
We understand.
And the bigger challenge is this. If we don't get it right,
mm-hmm.
it can slip further down. And if it does, even that which you have now, you could lose. Yes.
Yes, and I know. I'm not talking in that way. I understand what you're saying. All I'm saying is if she can do that for people that did not pay.
The non-contributory pensioners.
Yes. If she can give them so much. All I'm asking is that if she can look, if then she could take off a little bit from them and help others like me that their money are so low. All I'm saying is that because it really, really is okay that people that might got an income, people that can raise chickens, people that can do something else. Because if you do anything with this money, you can't get it no more. It's okay if you got something else coming in that can help you.
Right.
You understand that you can say, well, look, this is...
But that's an interesting point because I wonder whether it is really useful to say to people who are on disability or whatever that they should not, they should do nothing to get any additional income. Maybe what we need to do is perhaps suggest that there should be a cap on their earnings if they went to, you know, because you could stay home. These are days where you could sit down home and go on the computer and earn money. You don't necessarily have to go doing anything that is potentially dangerous. Yes. And if you can do something else that can take you there, fine. Why should that be discouraged?